Accession number 32589, Real 6.
What sort of condition was Tokyo in?
I visited Hiroshima as well. 52. And it hadn't been rebuilt, or not much of it. It was regrowing, but it was pretty devastated. And a lot of the Japanese thought we were Americans. We didn't stay very long because we had felt an uneasy atmosphere. And got the next train back. So I tried to use the time. I didn't particularly want to get drunk. The few times in my life when I have got drunk, I've been rather ashamed of myself. But I could usually drink enough for three men without getting drunk. But I didn't do all that much on that occasion. And I bought books. I bought bits of jewellery. I got a book for my sister on... Shirley will tell you what it is. It's, make paper shapes. I enjoyed my leave. It was a very refreshing. There was very much the atmosphere, eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow you're back in the line. But that didn't disturb my zest for sightseeing. I mean, I go to France every month. Frequently I take different journeys, and if there's a town that I haven't been to before, I'll drive off and go and have lunch in the town square and so on, especially if I've got Mrs. Johnson with me, which I have about half the time. She's a good travelling companion. Shirley now doesn't like to travel very much. We're going to a Hallamshire's final laying up of colours in the Sheffield Cathedral in September. We're going to the last ladies' night in July. And she's going up by train from here, and I'll leave my car at Kettering and get this train or the next train. Meet up in Sheffield, and then I'll go to France next day and take Mimi back. That's on the 20th of June. Mimi has a bad time in the village now. I mean, she had a colonic operation last year, and they removed 15 centimetres of colon. But she's recovered from that. But she's at 86, she walks with a stick and has a bad knee and so on. But her mother lasts to 102, and as I tell her, there's no reason why she shouldn't if she behaves herself. She's a great help to me. I run my property empire on a shoestring because I've never had any money. I'm borrowed to the tune of about $500,000, which were Shirley. And I'm having difficulty in the recession and getting all my rents in. But I think I'll get by, although I've practically run out of capital, which I was using for top-up purposes all last year. But in spite of all that, I think my morale is good, as it was in Korea. I think my capacity to take risks comes from those days.
What sort of reception did you get from the Japanese themselves?
They were interested, wanted your money. They'd seen a lot of the Americans, you see. They'd seen MacArthur after the war. They thought quite highly of MacArthur, because he was told to rebuild Japan, and he did. Did it positively and didn't give them any more trouble than he had to. They learned a lot off the Westerns. They learned quickly. I didn't, apart from that one incident at Hiroshima, I didn't sense any difficulties.
Did the army issue any guidance or instructions as to how you were expected to behave?
No. But the British Army is funny like that. There was a handout leaflet, a fanfold thing, on how to move the wounded in trenches. But it, I never saw it in the rifle companies. It never went out of battalion headquarters. They preferred to let people think that it's him that's going to get hit, not me. It, there wasn't a lot of instruction given. For example, on the way back in Hong Kong on the troop ship, Thornton and I, again, were wandering in Hong Kong, and we didn't know that the business area that you have going up from in Kowloon up the, you have a main street, straight street, and on the right is the business area which you can go in, on the left is the Chinese, which is out of bounds to British troops, even the ones local. And a jeep pulls up alongside us, and we're in the sort of market area of the Chinese, just down where you remember a tall slim girl in a sarong and a split right up to the side of her thigh. And a jeep pulls up with the RAF police in it, and he said you're out of bounds. There was a driver and a corporal with their white Bentley, and he said you're out of bounds, so get in. And I looked him up and down. I said, well, thank you for the advice, corporal, but I decline, and walked on. He couldn't arrest me, he's a corporal. He came back half an hour later with a sergeant, and we were picked up and taken away, interrogated and what have you. And I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be buggered about by an RAF corporal. And secondly, the ship sails at midnight, we've only got a few hours, and the interesting part is down here. And not giving anybody any trouble. And so we were taken back to the ship half an hour before it sailed, and off we went. But, lack of advice.
How much contact did you have with the Korean population?
Quite a bit. In my case, via Seymour. If Seymour was off duty, and he wasn't, you couldn't find him, he'd be in the Korean porter camp. We had Korean porters attached, to which was useful, because up the hills everything had to be humped, ammunition, stores, everything. And we had about 50 porters, and they lived just round the hill from us. And Seymour used to drink tea with them and learned a few words and so on. And which he passed on to me, and I could communicate with them a bit. But then we had CATCOMs. This is not normally reported. K-A-T-C-O-M-S, CATCOMs. Korean Augmentation Troops, A, Commonwealth Division, COM. And we had, I think, a company per battalion, which is about 100 men. And they were put out about 20 to each rifle company, and they were a bloody nuisance. They were like animals. They could hear well and so on. They'd be sent out in a standing patrol, one maybe two, with two Englishmen, and they'd hear the Chinese coming patrol before the English did, and they'd bugger off, leave the Englishmen and give the position away. So the strangest order I've ever seen was published in Part 1 Orders, that NCOs of the rank of corporal and above are from today authorized to use physical force against Korean nationals serving with the British Army, because the only thing they understood was getting thumped. And you had to intimidate them. They had to be more frightened of you than they were the Chinese to be any use to you. So, and that was the British Army's main experience of the Koreans. And Mimi's son up here in North London has a Korean millionaire with a Rolls Royce lives about three doors away and fraternizes. But and I am polite with him, but that's about all. I talk to him and so on. I've never put a word out of place, but I some of my pals died helping that chap come to England and become a millionaire. He has big houses which he's converted into bedsitters and flats in South London, and he's made a lot of money.
Did you see much of career itself then?
Hmm?
Did you see much of career outside of your posted areas?
We went in at Pusan, and we went up to the front line by train, which I remember very clearly. The toilet in each carriage, which were through carriage, the seats were wooden slats, and it was a sort of triangular funnel, and with stirrups on it. You stood on the stirrups and squatted over the hole, and we were on this train for 3 days, going up, winding up slowly through, and we. There was always a chance that there were infiltrators behind the lines, and we had a rifleman at each end of each carriage, and the rest of us just we had haversack rations that were passed down through the train. The whole battalion was on the train, and we noticed, you know, the architecture, nearly all bungalows. The reverse swastika, the Buddhist symbol, was visible, and most villages seemed to have a temple, and you know, just villages surrounded by paddy fields and so on. So we saw it, but it didn't touch it. and I was fascinated, and that's when I learned what the burial mounds were first, because they were usually an official, a sort of headman of a village. The rest were just shoved in a hole in the ground somewhere, and probably unmarked. But there were these burial mounds here and there, which could easily be mistaken later on for machine guns. So, no, we didn't see a great deal there. When we were in reserve, the area 50 kilometres south of the Imjin was probably demilitarised. All the fighting areas, there was hardly any villages. We had when we were in reserve once, we had a chap go absent. I think this might have been after the truce. And somebody heard an explosion in a minefield. This was near Kamaksan, which I'll tell you about in a minute because it's interesting. I've mentioned Kamaksan with its radio thing above it, and so I was asked to take the minefield map, because it was a divisional map, and I was put in a helicopter and sent to look, but it was a deer that had blown the mine. I found its body, and it wasn't the soldier that had gone absent, which somebody thought it might have been. After the truce in Korea, there were two slightly amusing incidents. We'd left behind a kit bag with our personal effects in, I'd left a pair of nylon pajamas and various other things, and with a kit bag with a lock on it. But when I got it back, my soot pajamas had disappeared, so somebody had been in the kit bag with them. In it was an American grenade and a British grenade, which I'd been going to bring home as souvenirs to make table lighters out of them. And I'd picked them both very well marked, painted, and so on. But I hadn't had time to empty the explosive. So I took the filling screw out and emptied them. Then I thought it wasn't worth the game. I'd have trouble getting through customs once I was caught, so I threw them away. And a chap came back in about 2 days later. He'd been having a walk outside the perimeter, and this was south of the Imjin. And he had an American grenade in his hand, green, beautifully marked, galvanized upper part and so on. I recognized it immediately. And he said, they've sent me to the intelligence section, Trent. Somebody to have a look at this. And he'd given to me. I said, yes, it's an American grenade. They have a 12-second fuse, not a 6-second like the British ones, so it'd take a long time to go on. Same sort of mechanism. You pull this pin out, you let go, and the lever flies up. And I did all this, you know, bing, went the lever, and so I've got about 12 people around me, you see. And they say, and they all start to dive in all sorts of directions, you see. Then I thought, supposing I'm wrong. Thank the Lord, it's got a 12-second fuse, and I threw it where I turned in the first place, and nothing happened. And so it was the right one. But that was the first incident. And the second one, it was three. I'm put on guard because the general's visiting, and anyway, Jeff Cork didn't like the way I did an about turn. Because I developed a habit, which I'd learned from somebody else, of turning and ducking it. And he said, I don't want somebody commanding my guard. Does a duck class turn? And I couldn't change it, for some reason. And I did the duty, but I didn't mount. We did a ceremonial drum mounting with the Texan beyond his drum and a bugler and so on. Anyway, that we had this prisoner in that I was sent out after. And he was just a marquee, and the lads were split in 12 in fours. And we had the prisoner in one corner, the four corner, and I had a 6-foot table and no second in command because we were short of NCOs. And so I had to stay awake all night. Anyway, the prisoner tried to escape. I must have been dozing, and I wake up, and there he is. There's the side the tent up, and he's getting out, and just his knees. And I look around, and there's somebody's left his rifle leaning against the table, and I reach it, and I throw it like a spear, butt first, at his legs, and hit him. And he shouted, but by that time I was halfway down the tent and grabbed him by his good ankle anyway and dragged him back in again. But it wasn't him, somebody else had already escaped about 3 days before. And this chap was of Canadian extraction who'd volunteered and joined the British Army and decided he was going home early. There's this big mountain, Camac San. And somebody said to me, could you get us permission? I think it might have been one of the clerks in the order room, one of Glackham's lot. He said, could you get permission to go up Camac San? I said, what do you mean, climb? He said, yeah. I said, well, I shouldn't think that's different. He said, but we want you to come with us to navigate. I said, oh, I'd love to, yeah. I said, and so I got permission. Yes. And at that time, we were getting up at 5 in the morning after truce, and we finished at 1 o'clock and had lunch and then the recreation and sport in the afternoon. So it wasn't pressurised by any means. And off we went, about a dozen of us. And I said, now, the mountain runs east to west, this big spine, quite steep and so on. And it was about 6,000. Could have been, no. Feet, yes, it would be, yes. And anyway, we go on this thing, we go up the spine, and we get near the top, and there you could see this little hut on the top of the rock pinnacle with its big aerials. We're only about 100 yards short, and I'd been following the track made by the muntjac deer, which I saw one in Korea. I thought it was a hare at first, because they were so small, and the horns were ears. But anyway, follow this track, and I trip over a wire like this, and I bend down, and I pick it up, and there's a triangle on it, and the red part is in front of me, and the yellow is here. So And I stopped and I put it back down again. And I looked back and they're all sort of yard apart, yeah, on the track. I said, stand still and stay on the track and walk past me, because I want to show you something before we get to the intercept station. And they all did this, and then when they got past, I picked the, and somebody in his Yorkshire way said, a bloody minefield. And then he said, and it's red this side, so we've come through it. I said, well done. We'll go back a different way. And luckily, it would be anti-personnel. And as protection, you see, this is what happened in a war situation. They put these damn minefields down, and they mark them, but, you know, they... But they're not mapped and not reported and so on. And nobody knows anything about them. We could have had half a dozen men injured. But we didn't, as it happened. But we went back down the road. Went back the long way around.
How much effort did the Commonwealth Division take in providing entertainment, I suppose, for
ENSA was quite active. When we were in reserve, there was nearly every month there was a concert party came out, and the units that were in reserve, and sometimes when we were in the Hook reserve position, that's when this incident with the singer occurred. So that was just behind the front line. But the Commonwealth Division was a force in its own right and a very mixed bag. You had the Indian Field Ambulance, you had the New Zealand Gunners, you had 29 Brigade with two Aussie battalions and one British. One of the other brigades was two Canadian brigades, regiments and one British. Princess Patricia's Light Infantry and the Van Der Zeem Regiment du Pied de Canada, ours was an all British brigade, I think. We were the King's Liverpool, the Black Watch, and the Duke Wellington's Regiment, the King's didn't do very well. Discipline was very poor. NCOs became unpopular for trying to maintain discipline and were picketed. Picketing was the steel picket, which is a corrugated piece of metal slashed across the face during the night. This is how they treated their sergeant majors. There was nothing like that in... And coming back on board ship, because I was a temporary sergeant by then, I think, I was in charge of the Duke Wellington's draft of 45 men. And I'd met one or two of the King's Regiment corporals earlier and knew a couple of them in particular. And when my lads were on fire picket on the ship coming back, nobody was allowed back below decks till after the captain's inspection, which was daily, and it was a way of, I mean, troop ships are overcrowded, they get a mess, and so it was a way of making sure the place was cleaned up and so on. Typical good hygiene, good military discipline. Anyway, the fire picket came up, they said, look, some of the King's chap are going down and playing cards below decks. And we tell them to get out, and they take their blood and tell us to piss off. And I said, well, next time it happens, go and get me, and we'll sort it out. And I went down, I said, when it happened, and I took a couple of lads nearest I could find on deck with me. And they must have heard where I was coming in force, and they'd all... The other three had nipped off. There was only one left, and he was going to bluff it out. And I said, right, well, you know you've broken the rules. I'm putting you in the brig. And And are you coming quietly, or do we have to carry you in? So we locked him up, and of course, the next night the king's corporal says, he said, don't let yourself be found after dark by the rail. He said, they're going to throw you overboard. So next morning at muster parade, which 8 o'clock in the morning, we had our own section of the deck. I told the 45 dukes, two of whom National Service had got, were wearing medals mentioned in dispatches. One was the ambulance driver, and the other was the water truck driver, who'd been one of my Richmond pals from the Green Hearts, and he was only about this big. But he took that water truck, a two-ton truck, twice a day round the hook positions, mortared and shelled for 5 days. Didn't stop him. And he was only just big enough. He had a seat like this in this 3500, those old-fashioned ones with just a little bit of windscreen on either side, wartime thing. And he was there regular as clockwork, so he got to mention dispatches for that. And he was so small that he had leather cushions, the thin military ones, hard ones, on his seat, and he leaned against them. And he just had about 4 inches of the seat to sit on because he reached the pedals. Anyway, I told them the news, and they said, don't worry, Les, said one of them. He said, there's 45 of us and only 30 of them. If there's any trouble, they'll all go overboard. I said, well, look, we don't want any trouble, but I'm just, I said, I shall keep out of trouble. Be assured of that. But trouble is the last thing we want, so, you know, just keep it cool. And that was that. We did pass off, but, I mean, not very good.